Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Asia Business First podcast. I'm Adam Bhaktia.
And I'm Julie Yu. You know, Adam, it's just in time for lunch.
It is.
Let's talk food for a change, because I think we never really talked about food on our podcast before.
No, we haven't, actually.
Right?
This is the first time.
I know, and I know how you love good, healthy food.
That's right.
Try to be healthy. Do you cook often, eat out, order in?
During the weekdays, I tend to cook, and on the weekends, I eat out a lot. I ate out last night for a change.
Yeah.
That's quite rare during the weekdays, you know, because I start work so early, but you kindly agreed to sort of shift your working hours with mine, which was great. So I got to eat out at this fantastic restaurant. But generally, you know, the one thing I have problems with it in Singapore is it's so expensive. Eating out here is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible over the last 10 years how things got so pricey. And in fact, last year, Julius Baer's Lifestyle Index ranked Singapore as the second most expensive city here in Asia for fine dining after Hong Kong, which says a lot, because actually at the end of the day, it all pegs to property prices, right? If the rents are high, you know, the restaurants are going to be expensive.
Yeah.
But cost aside, I have to admit, maybe out of slight laziness that I do like.
Slight
laziness. I do like, having the convenience of food delivery apps here in Singapore, and in fact, anywhere around the world. And I'm sure I'm not the only one that feels that way.
No,
it's so convenient.
Yeah, I recently discovered the world of delivery apps too, and it's so hard to get back to cooking.
It is.
It's so convenient.
I'm still waiting for that invitation, Julie.
Coming your way soon, I'm sure, Adam. But you're certainly not alone. Given an increasingly fast-paced lifestyle, the reliance on digital technology and all that, and in fact, from a survey of 13,000 people around the world, the investment bank UBS estimates that global online food ordering is set to increase from $35 billion today to $365 billion over the next 12 years. And that's a compound annual growth rate of more than 20%. So what's driving this trend? Well, the study finds that millennials, of course, they are three times more likely than their parents to have food delivered to them. And ordering in is also expected to become much cheaper and faster with the introduction of robot chefs and improvements in logistics.
Yeah, speaking of logistics, just this week alone, one food delivery app, I think it was Deliveroo, launched a new subscription service here in Singapore. I think you pay $10 something a month or something, and you get unlimited free delivery and discounts. That's the bad news for people like me. I'm going to be stuck on my couch ordering food through this unlimited free delivery app for $10 a month. And the more you order, obviously, it makes it worthwhile. But there are also food delivery apps that have set up dark kitchens. That sounds ominous, doesn't it?
Ominous.
Well, these are commercial kitchens where staff from participating restaurants prepare hundreds of meals, but the food isn't for customers on the actual premises. Instead, the cooked meals are immediately whisked away by couriers on those motorcycles. So you can imagine the cost savings, if you think about it, in terms of, you know, the brick and mortar, the manpower, the utility bills, which, by the way, are going up in Singapore as well.
So there are more than a dozen of these dark kitchens in the US and UK. And since last year, two such dark kitchens have sprouted in quick succession here in Singapore. So how concerned should restaurants be about this increasing appetite for home delivery? And how can restaurants make themselves more attractive to cost-conscious consumers?
Well, we can discuss that with our guests today, executives from both sides of the food and beverage spectrum. We've got Leong Kai-jit, who's the chef owner of a Greek restaurant called Alati, which means salt. Welcome, Jit. Mm-hmm. Great to have you. And we've got Dinesh Balasingham, who's a founding member and chief operating officer of the Chope Group, a restaurant reservation booking platform operating in 8 Asian cities. And in case for our listeners out there who don't necessarily come from Singapore or even Malaysia, if you're wondering what chope means, well, it's a slang word in Singapore, which means to reserve something, whether it's a seat in a car, on a plane, or in a restaurant. I love it. Chope, I chope this first. Okay, welcome, gentlemen. Great to have you
today.
We're on the point discussion of these dark kitchens, I want to get your thoughts on that. I mean, what do you make of that development in today's world with these dark kitchens to service, of course, the online delivery apps that we have? I mean, is it a good or bad thing for restaurant owners, operators?
I mean, for the restaurants, delivery is actually it's something new for us. It gives us an additional revenue source at the end of the day. Although we have to change the way that the concept is, the food that we are serving is, it is still an additional revenue for us. And these dark kitchens, I don't believe that it actually takes away, delivery doesn't take away from what we are currently earning. Most of the clientele that we have, they're usually stuck in the office. They're not going to come out of their offices to go to the restaurant to eat either way. But being able to deliver the food to them, it gives us that opportunity to also sell it to them at the end.
Dinesh?
Well, you know, for me, the short answer is no, because I don't think it really affects dining. I don't think it's something that you can replace the dining experience with. I mean, personally, when I do order food in, it's because I don't have a chance to go out. Mm-hmm. And I feel dining is such a social activity that, you know, ordering in or having these dark kitchens where, you know, they can deliver to you doesn't really replicate that sort of experience that you have. So I think that while there are people who do both, like myself, I think dining as it is, we don't see the effect on like reservations, for example.
Oh, so you haven't seen any the fewer people making reservations on Chope?
No, actually, no. Oh. I like, you know, like Jit said, I think it actually helps to supplement or gives them like an additional revenue stream to be able to reach out to people who otherwise won't be able to do so to come into the restaurant. Yeah.
Okay, well, we better hope we don't see a drop in reservations
because
Chope might be a little bit
I hope so.
So Dinesh, tell me, I mean, you know, Chope has started what, back in 2011?
2011, that's right.
So how has business been as we've seen this sort of burst in the 4.0 economy and the digitalization of just about every single traditional business out there?
Right.
I mean, has it been good?
It's been good. I think it just helps because people have such shorter attention spans. So anything that makes it more convenient for them to, for example, browse or discover restaurants to be able to make that booking is something that's been good for us. You know, other than the utility factor, we also try to do more to, you know, help people save. Like you said, it's not the cheapest city to eat in, Singapore. Mm-hmm. You know, we do have amazing hawker food. I think being a first world country with food at third world prices, or what I like
totally
to say,
agree.
It's amazing. But, you know, you talk about dining out, it is expensive. So we do work with restaurants to come up with, you know, promotions, I would say, or different perks to help them, especially during their slower periods. We do have like loyalty programs to help to incentivize people to use apps like ours. But I think it's been good. I've seen in different cities as well, because we operate more than in Singapore. Educationally, the idea of, you know, picking up the phone versus going online and making that reservation, people do that for movie tickets, people do that for plane tickets. So I think it's something that was inevitable. It was just something that we kind of came in at a good time and was seeing that change in that behavior.
Yeah, and just, I mean, your restaurant is listed on Chope. I mean, how has it helped boost your business?
When we first started, we were actually using one of your rivals.
Yes.
It was just, it was called Kwandu. Uh-huh. And then when we actually shifted to Chope, we actually saw a very big increase in our reservations. I assume it's because of all the loyalty programs that that Chope has at the end of the day.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and I think they have like Chope vouchers, Chope dollars and all these sort of things. It actually makes the customers come back. Like the other day, I had a guest and she called in and she was like, I need to make a reservation. But I made it via Chope, but I didn't get a confirmation. He said, oh, then she was like, I don't think it was booked. So she said, you can actually go online and check and do it again. So she's like, but I can put it in for you now, is it? Then she was like, no. I want my Chope dollars. Yeah, so she's like, I'll do it by Chope. No, no worries. Then she puts on the phone, like, okay.
Well, that's the power of branding and loyalty programs.
People
so clearly
loyalty.
It's the right strategy, right, Dinesh? Mm. But, you know, Jit, I'm just curious. I mean, you said you were using Kwandu before, but I mean, you know, when you've got, there's multiple competitors out there, you know, how do restaurants manage that? I mean, can you use multiple platforms for these online reservations for your restaurants? Was it more advisable just to use one? Obviously Dinesh sitting there going, you better just be using Chope. You know? I'm just curious. I mean, can you use multiple ones and does it improve in your business in the restaurants, or is it better just go with one player?
Actually, this was something which I noticed a lot. A lot of, especially expats, when they come here, they know Kwandu because Kwandu was I believe it's a German.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm. So the European market, when they came here, they knew what Kwandu was and they were using Kwandu to make the reservations. The locals, they know what Chope is as their reservation platform. And they both have a certain kind of loyalty program to some extent. So they would just place the reservations in whichever they want. And other than that, they would be calling in. I mean, we are facing manpower issues, as we all know, but you know, we can't have someone sitting in front of a phone all day long waiting for phone calls. There are other solutions like diverting your phones, having a voicemail system. But people don't want that inconvenience. They like it to be really easy. You know, they go to their phone, they press a few buttons, mm-hmm. and they have their reservation confirmed. Mm-hmm. For us to manage that, we needed to actually manually put it into one reservation, like a table management system. Mm-hmm. You know, traditionally, the maitre d's in the restaurant, they would be using like their books, they'll write the name, all the different preferences. But table reservation system, they just consolidate all of the reservations just before the service. And then we start to use that for our operations.
I mean, Dinesh, yeah. I mean, Jit just said that a lot of the locals know Chop, mm-hmm. but actually 2/3 of your clients are based in outside Singapore, like Thailand and right. Indonesia. I mean, what's the outlook for Singapore's F&B sector and compared to the rest of the region in the near term?
Well, you know, we started in Singapore, so I think that was a base that we grew very quickly, and the name Chop, obviously very much local. Yeah. And I think we did that on purpose because we wanted to have people to know where our roots were from. We're very proud to be a Singaporean company. Mm-hmm. You know, cities like Thailand, cities like Hong Kong, Thailand's not a city, Bangkok, where we are. These are huge cities, much bigger than Singapore. So the number of restaurants in those cities are much, much larger. And as a result, I think eventually when we start to grow a business, that's what's going to happen. I think in terms of Singapore's dining scene, it's very, very competitive. We see that constantly, you know, the churn, and you see how many restaurants open and close on a consistent basis. Mm-hmm. You know, honestly, you can go to a street like Amoy, go there 6 months later, and you'll see a change to it. Mm-hmm. I can guarantee it. Mm-hmm. And I think what it forces us to do is, for restaurateurs as well, is to be better prepared or to plan better. Mm-hmm. When they're opening a restaurant, I think the misconception, and I hear this all the time, although I'm not a restaurateur myself, and I'm sure Jit can share that as well, is that they think F&B is a really easy sort of industry to kind of get into. So, you know, I think being better prepared to say, okay, I have a strong concept, I have a good chef in place, knowing these things, having that business acumen, you know, mm-hmm. being able to go out there and speak to other chefs or speak to other restaurateurs, is actually quite, I would say, a supportive industry. You see a lot of four hands dinners, you see a lot the collaborations happen because I think they realize that they need to band together if they really want to survive. Mm-hmm. And I think people are willing to share that kind of expertise. So I think it forces people to do a better job when it comes to planning. Everything coming down from, like, you know, having good press releases, better photos to represent yourself, even the social media strategy. Mm-hmm. I think these are all things that, you know, you can't just survive by being a good cook. You have to have a full 360 sort of strategy when doing this. I think the outlook for Singapore is positive, to be honest. I think, you know, we just announced, I think it was yesterday, the World's 50 Best is going to be hosting the award ceremony in Singapore next year. You know, mm-hmm. the Michelin Guide came to Singapore 3 years ago. I think all these things are marks to say that people recognize Singapore as an F&B, I would say, titan. I would use that word, because really we have so much talent in the scene. Mm-hmm. It's just about whether we have the know-how and the tools to be able to maintain that position.
Yeah, and yet there still seems to be high turnover in these restaurants opening and closing. Sure. I mean, everybody wants to get out of the 9-to-5, right, and say, oh, I'm going to open up a business, or I'm going to open up a cafe or a coffee shop or something. I mean, Jit, from your perspective, you know, how do you view the F&B sector here in Singapore and its evolution? I mean, with the Michelin star ratings coming to Singapore, with, you know, ratings even down to street food, right?
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, it's
yeah.
brought a lot of publicity to the F&B scene here. Has it worked in your favor?
I think for the F&B scene in Singapore, I mean, my Greek restaurant being as a Greek restaurant as it is, it's as niche as you can get, you know. And furthermore, we steer away from like Bakalaki and the other guys in the sense that we are more seafood oriented, and that's even more niche at the end of the day. But if you look at the F&B sector as a whole in Singapore, there is a lot of diversity inside it as well. There's amazing restaurants like Cheek by John. You have people starting to go into fermentation processes like and aging. You know, you have all these concepts that Singapore has never had before. Because before this, it was just, I remember when I first started cooking, it was Italian food. You know, the classic Italian food, classic French food. You know, and now all these new chefs, all these guys, they are coming in with new ideas, great ideas, I would say. But also, as you mentioned before, the difficulties in how restaurants are always closing is not good enough to be just a good chef. Mm-hmm. You know, it's that entire plan has to be there.
Yeah, I mean, at least four fine dining restaurants, you know, three of the Michelin stars shut down in the first half of this year, right? I mean, what do you think is the biggest challenges for Singapore's dining scene right now?
Well, I think there's some things which will always be the case, which will be the pricing when it comes down to rental, you know, the competition for staff. I think those are things. But, you know, I don't always see restaurants closing, in particular, if you talk about the Michelin star restaurants, that's a bad thing. In the way that talking to a lot of chefs, sometimes you want to embark on something new. When you are at a restaurant all the time cooking the same thing, sometimes it can get boring. You need kind of a fresh jolt of creativity. Mm-hmm. You want to open a new concept. You want to start anew. So, you know, for some of these restaurants, it wasn't because Per Se was doing badly, but I think it's about evolution for them too, as chefs, as a concept. So I think it doesn't necessarily spell doom just because they're closing down. But it no doubt is the case that, you know, a lot of restaurants, like I said, churn is high. But that's something we see in Hong Kong. It's something we see in Bangkok. When I go to New York, it's the same sort of situation. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that's going to be always the case with F&B. Mm-hmm. You know, and it comes down to the fact about knowing your consumer, knowing what's out there, knowing what people want. And it's not necessarily just delivering what is out there. You know, you don't always have to cater to a certain taste. Sometimes it's about breaking new ground. A lot of amazing chefs have come in with their own sense of view, their own individuality, and have delighted people as a result of that too. But I think it's about, you know, really understanding where the market is at and then knowing how to play your cards, right?
Dinesh, I want to touch on that whole 360 that you were talking about and the value that Chope brings to restaurants like Jits. Versus vis-a-vis, of course, whatever the business model, the pricing model is that you're charging some of these restaurants. I mean, how do you strike that middle balance insofar as building the whole ecosystem to get more restaurants to come on board with Chope versus what you're offering them? I mean, I presume because it's all digitalized that you're going to be able to actually track customer preferences and data. And in this day and age, data is everything, right?
It is. And I think that's the advantage. You know, for us, what we're trying to build is a community and a network. You know, as a restaurant, you can market to the people that have been there, but it's very hard for you to kind of go out of that circle. If someone has been to example, Blue Cuisine or Bakalaki, which is also Greek restaurants, then I can also market Lati to them because it's based on what their preferences are. And that is something that a restaurant themselves can't do. So because we have a lot of this data, that's something that we can help with in reaching to people, not just, you know, throwing the news out there and seeing, hoping that something sticks, but to be very, I would say, deliberate in the way that we target people to talk to them about preferences or what they would be interested in. I think that's one thing that we do. It depends on the restaurant, to be honest. Like, you know, you asked just now about restaurants being able to use multiple platforms. We do know a lot of restaurants who do, but it depends on what stage of growth they're at. If they're a new restaurant, they want to get the word out there, it makes sense for them. They're trying to use as many platforms to see, you know, maybe, like you said, with Kwandu, they are more familiar with the German group. So, you know, they want to reach out there. We are more have more traction with the local people so that they use Chope for that. But then you also have restaurants who are looking to increase their efficiency through tools. We provide table management systems. We provide queue management systems. Then for them, they'll be able to understand their diners better too. They track their own customer preferences. They know that, you know, Julie, you've been to a restaurant 10 times. Maybe the next time you come back, they offer you something special. You feel more at home. You feel the service is personalized. All those kind of things. So on one end, there's that. And then on the marketing side of things, whether it's building that network out and letting them take advantage of that too. We have all these loyalty programs and things too, which the restaurants do benefit from. You know, people will want to make reservations. I have friends who will only book on Chope. Even if a restaurant's not on Chope, they won't go there. They'll book it on Chope because they, you know, they want to be able to get those loyalty points. So it's just an easier way to discover. Or, you know, for someone like me who makes my reservations at 2 a.m. in the morning because that's the only free time I have, no one's going to pick up the phone, you know. So that's just like a convenient way to do so. So like you said, you know, saving on that manpower, making sure that you don't have to have someone, you're not going to miss your reservation because now you have a booking engine that we also power on the restaurant's website so that people are able to get their seats. I think we try to offer as much as possible to give a holistic sort of approach to helping restaurants not only market, but survive in a tough industry.
I think you should come up with a system where you are tracking every single one of your diners' food.
Oh.
And then whichever restaurant they go to, the customer, the waiter would just go like, oh, you So we kind of know it immediately, whether it's a new guest or not, that it's like, okay, he likes beef or he likes fish. Uh-huh. Let's start to recommend him these sort of dishes along that kind of lines.
Well, that should be quite easy to sort of implement, right?
I mean, if we have those tools available, this is the part where I guess it comes down to the restaurants to be able to key those things in the sense that, or tie up with their POS system with the ordering, because we have to make that connection. So obviously, if restaurants, and I think some of them do key in those kind of preferences, that's something the next time someone comes in, they can track that very easily.
Interesting.
Yeah. Oh gosh, I'd be so predictable. You'd know exactly what I would eat. The same dishes food. In the same restaurants. I'm just curious, so with the table management system, I mean, how does that help you? Because one thing that I've noticed a lot of the times when I'm trying to make a reservation in a restaurant is you ring up and say, I need a table. Can I get a table that, oh, we're full? And a lot of them, if there's human interaction, what I've noticed is a lot of them don't think to suggest an alternative time for two seatings, for instance. Yeah. I mean, where you can obviously make more money. Mm-hmm. Does Chope's app get over that in terms of the table management system, Jit? I mean, can, you know, obviously, do you have two sittings in your restaurants?
Can the app
manage that situation so that you can have people come in at 7 and then again at 9 or, I don't know, 9:30? Because I noticed that is something that is an issue in many restaurants that I've been to in Singapore where they don't suggest a second seating.
What I do is, in Alati, we do not run double seatings.
Oh, you don't? Okay.
Yeah, because I'm a bit more old school kind of thing. I like the guests to enjoy himself. I don't want him to feel rushed out of the restaurant, you know. I don't like to be rushed out of the restaurant. I'm not going to do it to my guests as well.
Okay, fair.
So the way that we work it out is that we try to, based on our own experience, you know, we know how long our guest is going to dine for. You know, we know that, like, for example, if a couple were to come, it would be a lot faster for them to leave the restaurant than a table of 8, for example. Mm-hmm. They're going to be there, they're going to be drinking, they're having fun, talking to each other. There's no way they're going to leave it fast. Mm-hmm. So with that kind of experience, it boils down to like the experience of the maitre d' or the host, the hostess who comes along and say, okay, I can put another table after that. You know, there is grounds for mistakes, of course, but, you know, we do some crazy things at Alati, like we just grab a table from wherever and just put it in some space within the restaurant and go like, here's a seat, you know, and it still works. I mean, they like that experience. They want to go there and eat, you know. They rather eat there than be turned away at the end of the day.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jit, I mean, since you're a chef, and we earlier did mention something about robot chefs, I just want to get your take on, I mean, does it worry you that they may take over your job one day?
Because we worry, Julie and I. They might take over our jobs.
I think it's quite funny, actually, because I'm the kind of chef who doesn't really go by feelings. You know, like, I think that this is enough, so that is it. I will do it one time to get the taste I want, and then everything will be recorded by a recipe, even down to, like, salt, how much salt you put
very
in.
Very precise.
Very, very precise. I even work with, like, percentages when it comes to even the salt that goes into the dish, so that no matter who does it, it's the same. Mm. And it's actually a good thing. I feel that it's actually a very interesting thing that the robots are probably able to do this even better than the humans can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you're going to have a very consistent product at the end of the day every time you go and eat. Yeah.
Okay, so would you employ robots as your staff?
I would put robots as my staff, actually.
Okay.
But I will still need one-hit chef, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, you need someone to be creative and come up with those recipes.
Yeah, to be creative and those things.
Speaking
as well.
Of technology and innovation, I mean, when it comes to the digital economy with platforms such as yours, Dinesh, clearly technology and the evolution of that is paramount to the future of your business. You know, what do you see happening in 5-10 years in the development of technology to service your app, and how advanced do you see that becoming?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, technology is such a great thing, but sometimes I feel as we go further and further along, it's kind of fearful.
It does.
Personally, it does. You know, business aside, I'm just like, oh my goodness. I think, you know, artificial intelligence is something that has been on the rise. And I think that is something that we can see probably affecting or helping us in what we're trying to do. You know, understanding your consumers better, being able to predict things before they even happen, which in a way is great, but in a way is scary. And I talk about, people always say this, you know, sometimes you're having conversations, and then the next thing you know, you log on to Facebook and there's an ad for exactly what you were talking about. You want to buy a crock pot. Next thing you know, you're on your Facebook and there's an ad for a crock pot. You're like, what's going on? So it's kind of scary, but you know, in a way, I think it helps to deliver things better to consumers, because choice is something that's great, but unlimited choice for me personally is a little bit of a problem. So if you can narrow it down to be like, here are three places we know you would love to go for dinner, and it's going to be right every single time, that's something that's going to be, I would say, significantly advantageous. And especially because you're tailoring to something based on my information. Yeah. You know, for Chope right now, we don't really have reviews on our site. And the reason for that is, I think for me, I personally am not a big fan. And that's because I don't know the person on the other side of the computer leaving that review. I rather trust kind of my friends to kind of understand what they like. You know, I ask you, Julie, where did you go? And if it was a hit, then I'll be like, okay, our palettes are kind of similar. So the next time you recommend me something, that's where I'm going to go. So I think with having like artificial intelligence, having more data on the customers and the consumers that we do, we'll be able to give, you know, better recommendations, ones that are more tailored, ones that I think would be more helpful or useful to people.
But looking into the future, I mean, I know that you've expanded into Indonesia, you're in China and Hong Kong, a number of markets, Thailand you just mentioned. But I want to get your perspective on, you know, the evolution of your business, because when you look at the digital age, all these established traditional business models have been disrupted by technology and with the app-based businesses like yours. We know that even with, let's say, ride hailing or whether it's fintech, these companies just don't stop there. They want to be all things to all people. And with technology, the lines are completely blurred. So the question I have to you is, what's stopping you, Chope, from eating into, say, Foodpanda's business, into Deliveroo's business? I mean, is that something that Chope is looking at doing?
I mean, we haven't talked about food delivery, to be honest, but if you see where we started, when we started as Chope, all we were doing was having a table management system, and we did some marketing for restaurants. That was it. And then later on, we decided like, hey, okay, we did queue managements, telephone managements. What we try to do is for the consumer, from every angle that they try to get into the restaurant, to be able to help the restaurant, you know, secure those details, information, collect that data, so they can have a better representation of, you know, what kind of business they're doing, how to improve on those things as well. We, 3 years ago, launched our e-commerce site as well, where we started selling vouchers, pre-purchasing vouchers for restaurants. And that's also really helped, because it kind of locks people in. It's massively helped to reduce like no-show rates for restaurants, because people, when you pre-purchase a voucher and you are going to use it anyway, and if you don't, then great, the restaurant still gets the money out of it and you kind of lose out. So we've tried to see as many ways as possible where we can help address what the restaurant, what the core business is. So I think I can only see us kind of growing that further, as we already have, to try to make sure that diners get the best experience out of it, restaurants understand their consumers best, and they are then able to address them in the best way possible. If that means maybe food delivery down the road, sure, it's honestly not something we have thought about, because I do see us as quite different. In fact, there have been many times where we've worked together on different campaigns as well. So you never know what will happen.
Just your outlook for the future?
Well, in terms of tech, at least, I mean, you know, the evolution of tech, what do you, as a restaurateur, what do you hope to see come out of technology to sort of help and build your business in the future?
Other than robot chefs.
Yes, other than robot chefs.
I think for technology, being able to link all the orders that the guests have, like they have eaten before, or even, as crazy as it sounds, as scary as it might sound, right? Even new guests who come in, like even a database, for example, of like what this guy has eaten his entire life. I don't actually see that as something impossible to happen in the future. You know, it could be like a database of what every single person in Singapore has eaten on a day-to-day basis, as long as they have used their, I don't know, credit card or something, you know, to pay. Then it goes through this POS system, and then it goes to all the restaurants. So you can imagine walking into a restaurant one day, and then before you even go in, the guy already knows your name. And then you sit down, suddenly all those recommendations are just tailored to the things that you like to eat. Like maybe even a digital menu where everything on top are the things that you enjoy, because your eyes go there straight. And then after that, are things that you basically don't eat, or things that you might have like a dietary restriction or everything. And it even removes that necessity of like restaurant staff to come over and recommend you a dish. You know, they just put what you like. And that, I think, is something really scary.
Scary, but good. I mean, I have to say, as a customer, consumer, I quite like it. And speaking of which, actually, you've put me in the mood to eat and grab my coffee, my regular coffee, every day. And you just brought out that point, and my cafe knows exactly what type of coffee I want, what size, how much milk, and how much sugar. So I'm going to leave it there, gentlemen, and go grab my coffee and my lunch. Thank you very much for coming in today to the both of you. That was Leong Gai Jit, chef owner of the Greek restaurant Alati. And Dinesh, thank you very much. It was good to see you. Dinesh Balasingham, founding member and chief operating officer of the Choke Group.
And for our listeners, if you enjoy this podcast, do share it, rate it, and subscribe to it. And while we may have satisfied your appetite for now, you can rest assured we'll be serving up a storm on our TV show, Asia Business First, Mondays to Friday at 9 a.m. Singapore, Hong Kong time on Channel News Asia. And the best part, no reservations needed.
you can join us anytime. Thanks for listening, folks.
Bye-bye.